Welcome to the Old Time Dragnet Show from Boise, Idaho. This is your host, Adam Graham. If you have a comment, email to us, box13@greatdetectives.net. Give us a call, 208-991-4783, and become one of our friends on Facebook, facebook.radiodragnet.com. Six months ago, we did our listener support campaign, and I said we'd only do that twice a year, we're doing it again. We, of course, have received many great contributions, even between the campaigns, since the August campaign, and we appreciate that. During the listener support campaign, it's just a kind of focus for this three-week period on Great Detectives and Old Time Dragnet. And it's meant to kind of raise some funds due to the absence of an actual sponsor. This past 6 months, we were pretty fortunate to have a great Audible as our sponsor for a four-week period and then for a two-week period. But this is kind of for most of the rest of the time. During the listener support campaign, we give an extra special thank you to those who support us. Everybody who gives $7 or more still gets access to the premium site. But those who give $20 or more will get a bonus gift. At the $20 level, one thing we're really happy about is the chance we had last time to send out a lot of radio plays from the Colonial Radio Theater. And they've got a wide variety. I'll highlight a few that I think might be of interest. And you can check out a full list of these at support.radiodragnet.com. Some of the dramas they have, King Solomon's Mine, they have Perry Mason, The Case of the Velvet Claws, and the Father Brown Mysteries, Treasure Island, and they also did their own Western radio series called Powder River, and season one is also available for a donation of $20 or more. We'll send those as digital downloads so you don't have to worry about the CDs. And at the $50 level, we'll send out to those of you in the U.S. or Canada an autographed copy of Tales of the Damned Night, or also a gift certificate good for at least one Dragnet radio set over at radioarchives.com. And those are real great high-fidelity audio, really luxurious audio, and I think people enjoy those. And at the $100 level, we have a gift certificate for Radio Archives, good for a 10-hour Dragnet to set, or any of their other sets. They've got Fibber, McGee, and Molly, something for everyone. So we welcome your support, and thank everyone for their support in the past. Go to support.radiodragnet.com. All right, well now, it's time for today's episode of Dragnet, and this one's called The Big Handsome Bandit.
Ladies and gentlemen, the story you're about to hear is true. The names have been changed to protect the innocent. You're a detective sergeant. You're assigned a robbery detail. For a week, you've been on rolling stakeout looking for a gang of thieves. There's no sign of them. On the way back to the office, you get a 211 call. Your job? Investigate.
Dragnet, the documented drama of an actual crime. For the next 30 minutes, in cooperation with the Los Angeles Police Department, you will travel step by step on the side of the law through an actual case transcribed from official police files. From beginning to end, from crime to punishment, Dragnet is the story of your police force in action.
It was Thursday, October 9th. It was cool in Los Angeles. We were working the night watch out of robbery detail. My partner's Frank Smith. The boss is Chief of Detectives Thad Brown. My name's Friday. We were on our way back to the office when a 211 robbery call came in, and it was 12:18 a.m. when we got to the corner of Oxford and Barton Avenue. The Moyle's Bar and Grill.
The officer back there. Something I can do for you?
Friday and Smith, central robbery.
Sorensen, Unit 6L86.
Did you answer the call here?
Yeah, my partner and me. He's on the other side of the place.
What do you got?
A couple of guys and a woman shot. My partner's with them now.
Uh-huh.
One of them's one of the holdup men.
Yeah, did you get a description?
Yeah, just put it out.
All right.
Guy that owns the place is back there if you want to talk to him.
Yeah, we do. Did he witness the shooting?
Yeah. Mr. Moyle?
Yeah?
These men would like to talk to you. This is Sergeant Friday, Officer Smith.
How do you do, sir?
How are you?
How do you do?
Anything more you need me for, Sergeant?
No, that's all, thanks.
We'll check the vicinity, see if we can come up with anything for you.
Good. You guys will handle the crime report, will you?
Yeah.
Right. Frank, you want to check with the ambulance crew while I talk to Moyles here?
Yeah, sure.
You want to tell me what happened?
I just told the other officer about it. Isn't that enough?
Well, we'd like to get the story from you.
Do you mind if we go over and sit down? The whole thing's been a strain.
Surely. Is this all right here?
Mm-hmm.
All right, sir. You want to start?
First off, I'd like to ask you a question.
What's that?
Do I look like a weakling to you?
Well, that's kind of hard to say, sir.
Not at all. Simple arithmetic. I'm 5'10", 185, never run from a fight in my life.
Uh-huh.
Working a bar, you handle some pretty tough ones. Loudmouths, guys that are trying to make time with some girl. You meet them all.
Mm-hmm.
Never had trouble with any of the rough times. Stood up and was counted.
Yes, sir. You can just tell us about the shooting.
That's what I'm getting to. First time in my life I wanted to dig a hole in the floor. Got to me.
Mm-hmm.
I told you I'm not a coward, but when them bullets started going around, I wanted out. O-U-T.
Yes, sir, I understand. Now, suppose you tell me what happened here.
Around 11:30, there are only a couple of people in the place. Young couple over here having coffee. And Lane and George.
Who are they?
Two of the people who were shot. George Traber and Lane Cronin. They're regulars.
I see.
They're sitting here having a beer. We're talking.
Uh-huh.
Almost every night, Elaine comes in after work. She's a waitress. Nice girl. Real sensible.
What about Traber?
He's a security guard at some kind of plant out in the valley. Aircraft, I think. Not sure about it.
All right. You want to go ahead?
We're all three talking when these two guys come in. First, I thought it was somebody for a belt.
Mm-hmm.
I know most of the people in the neighborhood. Never saw these two before.
Yes, sir.
Come in and order a drink. I gave it to them. And they paid.
Yeah.
Dirty trick.
Well, how do you mean that?
Gave me a $5. Drinks came to $1.20. Big guy picked up his change, left 80 on the bar. Figured it was a tip. Picked it up. Gonna drop it in the glass.
Yeah.
No sooner turn around, the little guy pulls a gun. Points it right at me.
Yeah.
Tells me it's a stick-up. Guy with him runs over to the door to cover it.
Mm-hmm.
Little man moves down the bar and tells George and Elaine to stay where they are. They won't get hurt. Then he turns around to me and says for me to empty the register. I did what he said.
Yes, sir. Now, the other man was by the door all this time, was he?
Yeah. Just standing there. I guess he wanted to check the other side of the place. Two kids had left. Wasn't anybody there.
Mm-hmm.
All the time I was standing there hoping that nobody had started anything.
Yeah.
Joe?
Yeah. What do you got?
Ambulance just left. Took all three of them in. Sorensen's with the suspect.
How they doing?
The old guy they found up front's not doing too good. Hit in the stomach.
Mm-hmm.
Other fella shot up pretty bad, but none of the wounds looked serious. Girl was hit in the right leg. Not too bad.
Anything else?
Well, near as I can figure, the guy who was shot in the stomach is one of the holdup men.
Checks out with what I got from the owner. Did you say anything?
The tenant said they'd call us from the hospital as soon as we could talk to him.
We better get in touch with the officer down there and make sure there's somebody with him all the time.
Yeah, I got the two guns involved. 32 automatic, 38 police special.
All right.
Found the 32 in the suspect's hand.
Okay. You want to call the office, have somebody stay with the suspect? I better get back to the owner.
Right.
That other cop tell you anything?
No, sir, not much. Now, if you want to go ahead with your story.
I thought maybe you had some kind of clue or something to tell you who the other two were.
There were three of them?
Yeah. Two in here. The other one was out in the car and didn't come in at all.
Mm-hmm. Did you see the person driving the car?
Not good. I told the other cops about it. Could even tell if it was a man or not.
What do you mean?
Might have been a girl with one of those new short haircuts. I just got a glance when they drove off.
I see. You want to go on about what happened in the bar?
Well, after this one guy told me it was a holdup, I gave him the money. I didn't want any trouble.
Mm-hmm.
I put the currency on the bar and the little fella stuffed it into his pockets. I thought they'd leave after that. Might have if I hadn't started to laugh.
How's that?
I started to laugh. I guess it was the tension and all, but when I opened the register, I looked right at the frame hanging over it. First dollar I took in.
Yeah.
This was my first holdup. I got to thinking about what I could hang up to show for it. Thought the only thing would be a frame full of nothing. It struck me real funny. Little fella got real sore, wanted to know what the big joke was.
Yeah.
I couldn't tell him. More he asked, funny the whole thing got. That's when he started to look around to see if there was some kind of private joke.
Mm-hmm.
George and Elaine must have thought I was nuts.
Yeah.
Elaine tried to wave to me and tell me to be quiet. That's when the guy saw the watch she was wearing.
Well, what happened?
Told her to take it off. Got real nasty about it. Guess he was sore about me laughing.
Mm-hmm.
She did like he said. As soon as I saw that, I got mad. Real mad.
Yeah.
I thought about what I could do. I don't keep a gun in the place. All I could lay my hands on was a wet bar rag.
What was that?
A wet bar rag.
Oh, I see.
So I did what the guy told me. Put my hands on a bar right out in plain sight.
Mm-hmm.
The little fella started to back out of the bar, and that's when George went into action.
How do you mean that?
He's a security guard. You know, I told you that.
Oh, yeah, I see.
Well, he carries this gun. He pulled it out and reached around the lane and blasted at the hold-up man. Hit him right in the stomach. Guy kind of turned like he was going to run, then fell right on his face.
Mm-hmm.
Then the big guy, the one at the door, he aimed his gun and shot at George.
Was the girl still in front of him?
Not exactly. You see, when George shot at the one guy, he knocked Elaine down. Wasn't fast enough, though. First shot from the big one caught Elaine in the leg. Second one got George.
Well, what were you doing all this time?
I was still there with my hands on the bar. The whole thing happened so fast, there wasn't anything I could do. Just stood there.
Uh-huh.
Right after that, the big guy ran out of the place. I jumped over the bar and went after him. Guess I forgot there wasn't any way I could stop him. Didn't think of that. Good thing I didn't catch him.
Yeah. You followed the man out on the street, did you?
Yeah. Saw him jump into the car and take off. That's when I saw the other person. You know, the one who was driving.
Yes, sir. Did you get a good look at the car?
Saw it drive off.
I understand, but did you see the license plate?
Yeah, but not so I could tell you the number.
Was it a California plate?
Yeah, I could see that.
All right, now about the car itself. Can you tell me what kind it was?
Nash sedan. I think it might have been a 1953. Can't be sure about that, though. Might have been a new one.
What color, do you remember?
Near as I can remember, it was kind of light tan.
All right, sir. Can you give me a description of the big man, the one who stood at the door?
Well, I gave it to that other cop.
Well, yes, sir, but I'd like to go over it again with you, if it's all right.
Sure. As long as it'll help you get to fellas.
All right, how old was he?
Well, I'd say 20-something. Anywhere between 24 and 27.
Mm-hmm. How about his height?
Tall one, over 6 feet. Didn't come real close, except when he was sitting. I couldn't pin it down for you, but I'd say over 6 feet for sure.
All right, sir. About his weight?
180.
Dark or light?
Light. Had light hair and blue eyes. Hair was wavy. You could almost say the guy was too pretty, like some kind of advertisement, you know, for hair oil or something.
Mm-hmm. What was he wearing?
Had on dark pants and coat. Wore a dark shirt and a white tie. Remember that, because you don't see that combination much nowadays. Back in the 30s, it was all a go.
Mm-hmm. You're sure about the shirt and tie?
Positive. Real contrast. Dark shirt and white tie.
All right. Was he clean shaven?
Yeah.
Talk to the business office, Joe. They're sending a team over to the hospital.
That's good.
Stop and talk to the men in 6L86. They checked the neighborhood. Didn't come up with anything.
Mm-hmm.
What about Elaine? Is she going to be all right?
Yes, sir. She's not hurt seriously.
Sure, glad of that. Felt bad about not doing anything to help her, but I'm the kind of guy, when I cut my finger, I can't even put a bandage on it myself.
Mm-hmm.
Always been like that.
Yeah. What kind of gun did the man at the door have, do you remember?
Looked like a .45 automatic.
I see. Mm-hmm.
Descriptions check out.
Yeah. Type of guns are the same, too.
You know these men?
Well, we've got an idea who they are, yes, sir. We've been after them for some time now.
Sure wish I could have given you more. This is all over in a few minutes.
Well, you've helped us quite a bit already, Mr. Moyle.
At the time, it seemed longer than a Monday when there's been too much Sunday.
Yeah.
These guys done this kind of thing before?
Well, we think so. They've been hitting theaters. This is the first time they've hit a cafe.
Hope it's going to be the last. The way they put the B on George and Elaine, like to see you get them.
Well, we're going to try.
If you do, could you do me a favor?
What's that?
I kind of goofed it up when they were here before. I'd like another chance at the big guy when he hadn't got his gun.
Well, I'm afraid we can't do that. Moyle, it's the police business.
Why not? He's bigger than me.
Yes, sir.
Be a fair fight, wouldn't it?
For the past 6 weeks, on Tuesday and Thursday nights, three people had been hitting theaters in the central Hollywood area. Descriptions obtained from the victims were the same in each case. Rolling stakeouts had been set up without result. Runs by the stats office had been checked out, and we were still no nearer to our suspects. In each case, the method of operation was the same. Two men would enter a theater box office and rob the cashier of all currency, and then leave in a car driven by a third person. We'd been unable to establish whether the person in the car was male or female. None of the victims had been able to give us a good description. However, in all of the holdups, the car the suspects used was the same. The robbery of the cafe and the shooting of the two witnesses gave us our first concrete lead to the identity of the suspects. The description of the smaller man matched the one we'd gotten in the theater jobs. From what the bar owner told us, it was more than possible that he was one of the bandits that we'd been looking for. We recovered the ejected shell casings and the spent bullets. They were booked as evidence. At 1:56 a.m., Frank and I left Moyle's Bar and Grill and drove over to George Street Receiving Hospital. We talked to Dr. Hall. He told us that the two victims were receiving treatment and would recover. From personal effects, the suspect was identified as Carl Layden. We called the business office and made arrangements for his home to be checked. Dr. Hall told us that the man was in serious condition, but that we might be able to question him. We went into the treatment room. Layden was under heavy drugs. Layden? Layden?
Yeah?
These men want to talk to you.
Well, tell them to go away. I don't want to talk to anybody. Tell them.
Clayton, we want to ask you about tonight.
You a cop?
That's right.
You tell me something.
What's that?
How bad is it?
They're doing what they can. You lost a lot of blood.
Am I going to make it?
We don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Now, who are the other two, Layden?
I don't know.
They left you alone. You don't owe them anything. Now, who are they?
Come on, Layden. How about the one in the car? What's the name?
They walked out on me, didn't they?
That's right. Now, what are the names?
How about it, Layden?
Norberg. He's one of them.
N-O-R-B-E-R-G?
Yeah. Sam Norberg.
Has he done any big time?
I don't think so.
Which one is he, Layden? The one in the bar?
The driver.
How about the blonde? What's his name? Layden?
Wait a minute, Joe. You're going to have to stop. No more questions these 2 weeks.
All right. We'll be outside, Doctor.
I'll be right with you.
Right.
What do you think?
I don't know. It's a good lead.
Yeah? You got a name. Let's find who wears it, huh?
Mm. Better run it through, I guess. Try to come up with an address.
Hope he's not the kind of guy who changes it 3 or 4 times a year.
Well, if he is, we can help him.
Yeah.
We'll give him a new one. A.M. Frank and I went back to the office. We contacted the team who'd checked Carl Layden's apartment. They told us they'd found nothing to help us in apprehending the other two suspects. The stakeout was set up on the place. We ran the name Sam Norberg through R&I, but we failed to turn a record on anyone answering his description. Frank checked the phone book and the city directory. We came up with 2 possibles. We asked Sergeant Bud Young and Officer Serrani from the business office to help us. 2:47 a.m. We got to the first address, 713 Larchmont Boulevard. It was a small bungalow. A tan 1953 Nash was parked in the driveway. The doors were locked and the radiator was still warm. While Young and Sirianni covered the door.
The car makes it look good.
Yeah, you want to get the door?
Probably asleep.
Mm. Somebody coming now.
Yeah.
Who is it?
Sam Norberg.
What do you want?
We want to talk to you. Police officers.
You guys know what time it is?
All right, move over.
Get this over fast. I got to get some sleep. Here. I can't stay up half the night answering questions.
All right, stand still.
Please, please. It must be really important to come around this late.
It is.
Anybody else in the house?
No, I got enough trouble trying to feed myself.
Well, you won't mind if we look around.
Does it make a difference if I did?
No, not much.
I figure that. Go ahead.
Check our back. Home's okay. Huh?
Yeah. Got the place surrounded? We expect to find the purple gang.
I wonder if you're as good with the answers as you are at the question.
Look, you might think I'm a foul ball, but I don't know what you're after. I'll have to hand you this.
Yeah.
You guys must have me mixed up with somebody else.
You're Sam Norberg, aren't you?
Yeah.
Well, we didn't knock on the wrong door.
Okay, Joe. Please check that screen.
You talk to Young and Sirianni?
Yeah. They'll wait for us. That's all I'm messing with this.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to rush you, fellas, but do you want to tell me what this is all about?
That's your car out in the driveway?
Yeah, what?
You got the keys in, huh?
On the table there.
All right. You want to get dressed?
Well, of course. I'm not going anyplace.
You keep believing that, but get your clothes off.
I got a coat in the closet.
Point it out. We'll get it.
There's only one there.
Right here. Now let's go. Here's the keys.
You see any more? I don't know what this is all about. When you find out you made a mistake, don't apologize. But I just go away so I get me some sleep.
Yeah, sure. You stand right there.
That makes you a big man, doesn't it?
You better keep your mouth closed. You're going to find you're in the wrong league here, mister.
I'll check the registration.
No reason to do that. I own the car.
How about it?
Got his name on it.
Well, who did you think you'd find? If you come up with anything, I'll split with you.
Anything else?
Wait a minute.
Take a look. Norberg, you know a Carl Layden?
Never heard of him.
You sure about that?
I told you.
And this is your car.
Well, you know that.
Well, then maybe you can explain this.
What?
This driver's license.
What about it?
Belongs to Carl Layden.
Hello?
are listening to Dragnet, the authentic story of your police force in action.
We made a thorough search of Sam Norberg's house, but we failed to turn up anything more to tie him in with the robberies. He was taken downtown to the city hall for questioning. 4:30 a.m.
Where'd you first meet Layden?
I don't even know.
Well, then you can tell us how his driver's license turned up in your car, can't you?
No, I can't tell you.
He said it was your car.
Yeah?
It was locked when we found it.
That's a pretty smart figure.
Well, I hope you're going to do some now.
What's that supposed to mean?
I don't know how long you think you're going to be able to keep this up. We got you nailed and you know it. Now, why don't you tell us what we want to know and we can all go home and get some sleep.
I'd sure like to help you, but I don't even know what you're talking about.
Layden says he knows you.
When'd he say that?
Tonight. Said you drove the car for him and the other guy.
Where'd you see him?
Layden?
Yeah.
Georgia Street Proceeding Hospital. He's unhappy with you boys. Figures you ran out on him.
Willing to fill us in on the whole deal.
With him on our side and the witnesses to the robbery tonight, you're in real trouble, Norbert.
This on the level?
Right down the line.
I heard Layden didn't make it.
You heard wrong.
You want us to put in a call so you can talk to him?
It's a lousy deal. Clint told me he was dead.
Clint's the blonde fella, isn't he?
Yeah, Clint Purnell. Told me all about how Layden didn't make it to the door of the place, that he went right out.
Well, that's not right.
I'll check on it.
Okay.
What a lousy Clint.
You know where he is?
No, if I did, I'd give it to you.
When'd you see him last?
Tonight, I dropped him off downtown.
Where?
Fifth and Spring. Said he had a big date.
Uh-huh.
Should have known not to trust Clint. Yeah. You got a cigarette?
Here.
Thanks.
Help yourself. How long you known for now?
I don't know. A couple of months.
Where'd you meet him?
A bar out on First Street. Layden and me used to go there all the time.
Uh-huh.
Layden and me have been good friends for a long time. We never been in trouble before we met Clint.
Purnell set up the deal?
Yeah. He started to talk to us about we could pick up some easy money. He laid out the whole idea. Layden and me told him we'd never been hung up in anything like it before.
Mm-hmm.
He said he knew enough for all of us. Clint's a pretty good talker. Guess it don't make a lot of difference, though. We could have said no.
Where's Purnell live?
At a place out on Venice Boulevard.
You got an address?
No, but I can show you where it is.
How'd you do?
I don't think we got it.
Take a look at these.
Huh?
Mr. Clint Purnell you're talking about?
Yeah, that's him. He's older than that now.
Mm-hmm.
He's better looking in person than he is in that picture.
Well, he probably had an off day.
Well, his clothes make him look different, too. The dark shirt.
He always wear them, does he?
Yeah, I never saw him anything else. He asked me one day why I always wore a white shirt. He said it was square.
Mm-hmm.
Asked me how long I could wear a white shirt. I told him one day.
Yeah.
He says I'm crazy. Big deal about how he can wear a dark shirt 3 or 4 days in the dirt. Don't show on the collar. Yeah. Since people don't know the difference. They can tell.
How many theater jobs did you go on?
Five.
How come you switched to cafes?
That was Clint's idea. Said you might have the show staked out.
Mm-hmm.
Everything we did, he planned it. We asked about something, he said not to worry about it. He had it all figured.
Yeah.
Oh, we said he was as smart as any cop. Kept telling us you made mistakes.
We do.
That's what he said.
He should have told you the rest of it.
What do you mean?
We can make him more than once. We took Sam Norberg down to the carpool and we drove him out on Venice Boulevard. He pointed out the rooming house where Clint Purnell lived. While I waited with Norberg, Frank went up to check with the manager. In a couple of minutes, he came back.
That looks like we missed it.
What do you mean?
Manager says Purnell was here about 2:30.
Yeah.
Packed his bags and left.
Frank and I, along with the suspect, went up and looked over the room. Apparently, Purnell had left in a hurry. We talked to the manager, but he was unable to tell us where the suspect had gone. He did tell us that Purnell had driven up to the place in a car and after packing his belongings had left. The manager went on to say that he knew the suspect didn't own an automobile himself and that he'd gotten the license number of the car in the event that there might be any trouble. We called the Department of Motor Vehicles and we found that the car was registered to a Mrs. Robert Sherburn, 297 Colorado Boulevard. Frank and I went back to the main jail and booked Sam Norberg in on suspicion of robbery. After that, we drove out to talk to the Sherburn woman. The address was a riding academy in Griffith Park. We left the car down the street and walked onto the ground.
Wonder what the pitch is. Purnell driving a car registered to a Mrs. Sherburn.
I don't know.
Guess this is the office, huh?
That's what the sign says.
So, Breed, I'm having trouble seeing the building, let alone the sign.
I don't know.
It's kind of early. Maybe no one's up.
There's got to be somebody around. Let's try it again.
Yeah.
Yes?
Miss Sherburn?
That's right.
Police officers. This is my partner, Frank Smith. My name's Friday.
What's wrong?
How do you do, ma'am? We'd like to ask you a couple of questions about
Robert,
the car.
Isn't it? Something's happened to Robert.
No, ma'am.
You don't have to lie to me. I know that's it. Robert smashed up the car and he's been hurt.
No, ma'am, that's not it. You know a man named Clint Purnell?
It's not about my husband?
No.
that's a relief. He left for Bakersfield this morning. I thought there'd been an accident.
Mm-hmm.
I was scared. Like when you're baking a cake and somebody slams the door, you have to check the oven, but you're afraid to look and you're afraid not to. You know how that is.
Yes, ma'am. Now, about Clint Purnell, do you know him?
Yes, I do. He's my stepbrother. Is that why you're here?
What's that?
Clint in trouble again?
We'd like to talk to him.
I guess I should have known it. Clint never comes around unless he's in trouble.
You seen him then?
Yes, he came by last night. Said he wanted to borrow the station wagon to pick up his stuff. He said he was going back east because he couldn't make a go of it here on the coast.
Do you know where he is now?
Yes. He's back in the tack room. Said he didn't have any place to sleep and I'd let him use the cot in there.
All right.
What kind of trouble do you in this time?
It'd be better if we talk to him.
Well, whatever it is, I'm not going to stand behind him. He promised me. He promised Robert. He's running again. He isn't going to get any help from us.
All right, where's this tack room?
Back there. The second door.
Thank you.
I hope there isn't going to be any trouble.
Well, if there is, he'll have to start it. Go and try the door.
Yeah.
All right, let's go.
What are you doing?
All right, Pernell, come on, get up.
What are you doing in here?
Hey.
Well, you got no right to come in here like this.
Right, get your hands around here.
I'll say.
All right.
Still. He's clean, Joe.
Want to check the bed?
Yeah.
You guys got a lot of nerve busting in here like there's no reason for it.
Yeah, sure.
45 automatic under his pillow.
Big deal, sir. You found a gun. What's that prove? You carry him, too.
Yeah, but there's a big difference, mister.
Is that right?
Yeah, we get paid for it.
The story you just heard is true. The names were changed to protect the innocent.
On January 20th, trial was held in Department 97, Superior Court of the State of California, in and for the County of Los Angeles. Samuel Garland Norberg, Carl Franklin Layton, and Clinton Ward Purnell were tried and convicted of robbery in the first degree, 5 counts, and assault with intent to commit murder, 1 count. They received sentence as prescribed by law. Robbery in the first degree is punishable by imprisonment in the state penitentiary for a period of not less than 5 years. Assault with intent to commit murder is punishable by imprisonment for a period of from 1 to 14 years.
You have just heard Dragnet, the authentic story of your police force in action, and starring Jack Webb. A presentation of the United States Armed Forces Radio Service.
Welcome back. Well, this is a similar theme to many other episodes we've seen, where when you get criminal partners, you only need to break one before they all start to collapse. Like I said, it sounds like a lot of the other episodes of Dragnet, and it's remarkable that Dragnet managed to remain as fresh as it was, even with some of the episodes that were very oddly familiar. All right, well, now we turn to listener comments and feedback. We begin with an email from, let me take a look here, Michelle. Dear Adam, I think you do an excellent job bringing the world of Dragnet and other radio shows. It's obvious that you're dedicated to this, and the world is a better place for it. 3 comments, though. I hope that this doesn't make you self-conscious, but there are synonyms for interesting, fascinating, enjoyable, fun, humorous, entertaining are all great words and often closer to what you really mean. I sometimes sadly move past your commentary because it makes me crazy to hear such a smart guy use a word to the point where it has lost any meaning. Well, I guess we... Oh, there's another one I use. And I can't really think of a synonym. Yeah, we all get into speech patterns and overuse words in our vocabulary. And I will plead somewhat guilty to that. Michelle does somewhat disagree with my interpretation of the later Dragnet TV shows. Just as John Wayne became a parody of himself, and so did Alfred Hitchcock, I think Jack Webb unintentionally did too. She goes on to question the realism of the show. She writes that by the time the 60s rolled around, enough people have had bad experiences with police officers in real life or indirectly through news to find Webb unbelievable, which is a sad commentary on police around the country, not on Webb. I think this had a great impact on how the show was viewed, particularly by the people most affected by police harassment and corruption, minorities of color, feminist, and young liberals. I think that there were definite levels on which Dragnet addressed some of these. Certainly, Webb was very well aware of the plight of African Americans and very concerned about racial and ethnic intolerance. Indeed, one of Webb's very first radio ventures in 1946 was a program called One Out of Seven, which addressed a lot of the issues of racism and prejudice in the United States in the 1940s, with a particular concern towards African Americans. And Webb's ability to relate well and to have very strong relations with a variety of African American performers with his interest in jazz, which kind of helped in the filming of Pete Kelly's Blues. Beginning with the Dragnet 1966 movies, Dragnet itself began to talk about racism and racial cooperation. Some of this, of course, was due to the pressure from the leadership of the Los Angeles Police Department at the time that was really focused on community relations. But Joe Friday himself stuck up for a African-American detective when they were attacked by a racist suspect. I think the second Dragnet episode, The Big Explosion, actually centered around a neo-Nazi who was going to blow up a school to stop it from integrating. And another episode featured Friday going undercover to stop a militia that was dealing in illegal weapons. So the setup on Dragnet was definitely very nuanced. His concern in regards to politics were with some of the groups that decided that they didn't like the laws and would ignore them or would take violent action against them. In Webb's generation, this idea that the American system and our way of the rule of law needed to be defended, that was the huge deal. Webb said several times to some of the kids of that generation that it wasn't that they were all wrong about changes needing to be made in society. Webb also saw a situation where lives of policemen everywhere were being devalued and disdained. As he illustrated so movingly in that Adam 12 episode, Elegy for a Pig, Dragnet reflected concerns of the policemen as well as a lot of the viewers who were drawn to the show in the 1960s and 70s. And Webb definitely did focus more on the dangers of permissiveness, particularly into later seasons. Now, whether Webb was right to do that or not is definitely a debate, somewhat beyond the scope of this program. But thanks so much for your comment, and she wrote more, but I just kind of summarized here. Thanks so much, Michelle. Appreciate you emailing in and listening. Andy emails in, Adam, I do enjoy the show and particularly like your commentary. Keep up the good work. I've just heard you say we have 52 episodes left. Is this true? If so, are you considering hosting something else? Well, Andy, I am weighing a lot of ideas. I'm still kind of thinking about it. I will get back to you when we get down to about 26 episodes, because I have a few ideas that are kind of moving around in my head, and I'll hopefully have a better handle on them by summer. Harry sent a couple comments. I have tried to vote for your show on Podcast Alley, but I only think of it while listening to your podcast on my iPhone and find trying to use the internet on my phone a lot of work. Have you thought of links for an extra would help? I prefer Friday's first partner to Frank or Bill. Barton Yarbrough is more of an equal to Friday, while the others are sidekicks. Yeah, there was definitely a different dynamic when Barton Yarbrough was in charge or was on the show. He also emails in with an opinion regarding theme music. Well, I thought I had no opinion of your music, but the music at the beginning of The Big Bible made me think of the 60s Batman show. I can see that a little. I like the 60s Batman show theme. Nora comments, I just want to thank you for doing such a great job on Dragnet and Great Detectives. They're the first thing I listen to when I get home from work each day. Also, I really like the new music you used this week for Dragnet and would love to hear it again. Can't wait to see what others think about it. Steven Manuel says, definitely prefer the old music. Thank you for all your good work. Well, thanks so much for your comments on that, and I look forward to getting more. Love to receive it on Podcast Alley. Turning over to Podcast Alley comments, thanks, Adam. Keep up the great work. Great show. And hi, Adam. As always, your knowledge of this show makes each one more alive to me. Keep up the great work. Cheers from sunny Ontario, Canada. And then from iTunes, have a reviewer who takes issue with a review I read, a part of a critical review I read from Uncle Chuck. Listeners can read the whole thing if they want to on iTunes. But he says, he must have just arrived. I admit I felt a tenth of his twist early on, but have come to really look forward to hearing you as well. Podcasts are a more personal sharing of those things that you feel passionate about. I love that about this medium, and those that invest so much of their busy lives into creating them for folks like me as well as for the ungrateful to enjoy. And I do very much enjoy them. Thank you, Adam. Well, thank you so much for your kind remarks on iTunes, and appreciate everybody who rates the show on iTunes and casts a vote for the show on Podcast Alley. Well, that'll do it for today. Remember, we do invite you to participate in the listener support campaign. Help support the show, and also, take a look at all the different thank you gifts we're offering this time around. A few different from our last campaign. Go to support.greatdetectives.net. Give us a call, 208-991-4783, and become one of our friends over on Facebook. Facebook.radiodragnet.com. But from Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham, signing off.